All right, joining me now here on the Army of NFL show, he is our lead NFL analyst at PFF and the co-host of the PFF NFL podcast. Second time guest on the show, it is Sam Monson. Sam, welcome back to the show. How are you doing after 5 weeks of football?
Yeah, I'm doing good. It's been a fun start to the season. We've reached that point now, right, where it's what did we get wrong in the offseason? What it was a complete surprise? And then where did we kind of nail it? And where are things unfolding exactly as we expected? So, yeah, fun time of the season.
Fun time. No winless teams, which is a bit surprising. Only one undefeated team. And I guess let me start from where you just said. What were we wrong about? What were we right about? I'm going to start with the Giants because they're 4-1 on the year, which I don't think anyone expected. I don't think anyone is out here shouting Super Bowl, but 4-1 is still a decent start for them. And this coaching staff has been pretty awesome considering the personnel they have, and the players are clearly buying into them. I guess, what have you seen as the X factors for this team getting to the start? I guess the play on the field won't tell you they should be 4-1, but they are 4-1 right now. So what have you seen from them?
Yeah, I mean, I think Brian Daboll is doing a great job with that group. And this was something that we talked about in the offseason, the impact that he could have on Daniel Jones, on the offense generally in terms of scheming up plays. You know, they weren't necessarily going to have the best offense in the world. They just don't have the personnel for that. But Daboll's a good coach and they can be productive even if they're not incredible. And obviously a healthy Saquon Barkley is a big boost and a big part of that as well. The Giants have been one of the shocks, one of the surprises of the season so far. And as much as I think that they're not really as good as 4-1, they're better than I thought they would be. I mean, I thought they would be a 4-6 win team over the course of the season, and they're already at 4. You know what I mean? So it would be very difficult for them to not exceed that kind of total by the end of the year, even if they do regress a little bit and come back down to earth a touch.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at their schedule the other day, and they're 4-1 right now. I'm going to pop it up here on the screen. They have the Ravens coming up this week, which will be a tough task for them. But after that, we have games with the Jaguars, the Seahawks, the Texans, the Lions. They still have Washington twice out there. There are a lot of winnable games there on that schedule for them, which is a fascinating situation. I was talking to my producer here before the show, and I was mentioning this to him, and I want to hear if maybe you could follow me on this. I see some similarities with this team to when the Bills started their rebuild with Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott in 2017. If you remember that year, the Bills were supposed to be bad, and they somehow made the playoffs with Tyrod Taylor. It was Kyle Williams last year with Buffalo. And Sean McDermott that year hired plenty of coaches who he had no history with, right? Like Leslie Frazier wasn't with him, but he hired him as one of the better coaches. Brian Daboll did the same thing, right? No prior history with Wink, no prior history with Kafka, but he still hired him. He's like, I want the best coaches here. And that's worked so far. And they ended up having a pretty good year to start. Now, I still don't know if they're going to, you know, stick with this personnel. Remember that year, they made the playoffs. Everyone was like, you should stick with Tyrod Taylor. They moved on, traded him to Cleveland. I don't know if that means Daniel Jones will be the guy after this season. I could see him getting the Tyrod Taylor treatment like he got in Buffalo. You're good, but you're not good enough. And here's another similarity to that year. That year for Buffalo, there were 5 first-round quarterbacks. They got Josh Allen. This year, there's talk we could have 5 first-round quarterbacks in this upcoming draft as well. I guess let me just ask you about this. What have you seen from Daniel Jones? Because I guess the box score doesn't really tell you he's this superstar quarterback, but like it's been in previous years, he's playing without you know, his key weapons. There, once again, most of them are out. But what have you seen from him, and do you think he could possibly be the future quarterback for this team?
Yeah, I think Jones has been better. I think he does fall into that category right now of a Tyrod Taylor type of quarterback, which is you could be good in the right situation, but I don't know if you can be where they need to go. You know, I don't know if you can do what Josh Allen did in terms of a turnaround or a developmental arc and become one of the best quarterbacks in the league. But he's been really accurate so far this season. Having Daboll's offense is helping him. It's sort of increasing the number of open targets that he has, even if the receiving group isn't there in terms of talent. And then it's the same old Daniel Jones in terms of he's a really good rushing threat, but he takes too many sacks. His awareness in the pocket isn't always great and isn't always where you want it to be. The issue for them, I think, repeating the Buffalo trick is going to be, do they win too many games to take themselves out of a shot of the kind of quarterback that's going to create that giant leap forward in play? Like, as much as Buffalo overachieved that year, they still wound up picking in the top 10 and being able to replace Tyrod Taylor with Josh Allen. If the Giants end up winning, you know, 9 games this season or 8 games, something like that, and take themselves out of that kind of contention, it might be tricky to replace Daniel Jones with a guy that's an obvious upgrade going forward.
Yeah, the only difference, I guess, is that the Bills, they cooped up a lot of picks that year. They were picking 22. They moved up to 12 in a trade with Cordy Glenn and the Bengals. Then they moved up from 12 to 7 to get Josh Allen. The Giants don't have that many picks in order to move up if they were to win too many games and try to move up to get the quarterback. Obviously, a lot of time left here in the season, but the way it's all started, it reminds me a little bit of that, and it is fitting that they do have two people from Buffalo leading the way right now in Joe Shane and Brian Daboll. The coach the Giants wanted to hire before Brian Daboll, when they got Joe Judge, was Matt Rhule. He ended up going to Carolina. He was just fired this week by the Panthers. Let me ask you a bit of a straightforward question before I get to Matt Rhule. The idea of hiring a college coach as a first-time NFL head coach, should teams with openings move forward just stop looking at that direction?
I don't think they should stop looking at it, but I think you need to at least have an understanding of what it is you're getting into. And there are a couple of areas where I would be very concerned about hiring a college coach. One is the situation we've just seen with Matt Rhule, who, if you're going to bring in a system that is a very college-y type of system, you know, one of these hyper-spread offenses that is very, very different from what we're seeing at the NFL level. That would be a concern to me because we don't know how that's going to work. And even in Arizona, Cliff Kingsbury, I think, has done a reasonable job relative to expectations and how things have panned out there. But that offense needed dramatic changes immediately. Like the first few weeks of the season, of his first season, they basically junked the entire offense. They went from, we're going to run all this 10 personnel, it's going to be air raid, it's going to be pure college. And then 4 weeks, 5 weeks into the season, that was gone. They were back down to like a normal level of 10 personnel, and they were kind of running a similar offense to other people. But some of the negative elements of that offense are still there. And I think that's part of why they're kind of underachieving right now. And then the other thing is the Urban Meyer thing, which is, it's a different dynamic, managing people, managing, you know, personnel, players, all that kind of thing. And you would want to have a very firm grasp on how this person is dealing with other people. And do they demonstrate the ability to lead via methods that are going to fly at the NFL level? And that's where I think the interview process is A, important, and B, difficult for owners, because you might not know that, you know, as an owner. You might want to have somebody in the room who has a better handle on the differences in that sort of social dynamic to try and prevent an Urban Meyer hiring. Because, you know, as much as that looks absurd now with hindsight, Urban Meyer's track record in winning everywhere he's gone is pretty unimpeachable. You know, we can talk about what a disaster it ends up at the end of it all, but the guy takes programs at the college level and immediately and inevitably has success with them, evidently via management methods that just don't function at the next level. And that feels so blatant with hindsight that I can't believe that somebody wasn't able to pick up on that in the interview process if you had the right people in the room.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when Rhule got hired. First of all, the contract they gave him, similar to how Deshaun Watson got his contract this year from Cleveland, owners were not happy with that contract for a first-time head coach getting that much money because they felt like it would reset the market for future head coaches. It did not, for what it's worth, but they were not happy about that. And the new owner, David Tepper, who is a very hands-on owner, gave him full control, which was a bit of a risky thing to do. And everybody believed it was a bit of a risky thing to do. And it clearly did not work out. They were 1-27 under Rhule when the opponent scored at least 17 points, which is just a wild stat. The one thing I wanted to ask you about this Panthers team moving forward is that the trade deadline is on November 1st. Should they just blow this up? Because people forget this. They don't have a third round pick from the Matt Corral trade in the offseason. They don't have a sixth round pick from the Stephon Gilmore trade. They don't have a seventh round pick from the Laviska Shenault trade. So they're already down capital. Should they look to trade some of the pieces that are on this roster and hit a bit of a reset over here?
I think a lot of that is going to depend on what David Tepper thinks. You know, he's obviously an owner, I think, that has fairly strong views as to what this team should be, as to where they should be going. And I think there is a valid reason for thinking that a change in the coaching setup now can actually have a pretty significant impact. Like this, when you look at what's happening to the Panthers this year, it isn't just, hey, Baker Mayfield is bad, you made a bad personnel decision, therefore the team stinks. The offense is awful. Like it's rudimentary. It's very, very basic. It's not putting anybody in a position to succeed. And I think there is a reasonable reason to think that simply getting rid of that and making some adjustments on the fly can create significantly better results than they've been getting. Now, losing their defensive coordinator as well, I think is a bit of a blow because maybe it nets out, you know, what you gain from an offensive improvement, you lose in a defensive regression or whatever. But I think this team can be better. And the trade deadline is, what, November the 1st? So we've got a few weeks for them to kind of get an idea of if that's realistic or not. If the Panthers still stink for the next few weeks and, you know, nothing looks like it's improving, then I think you've got a much stronger argument for, hey, let's try and ship a bunch of pieces out, you know, at the deadline, see if we can get collateral back and maybe start a full rebuild. But if they do show some kind of immediate bounce and suggest that this can be a better team going forward, then I don't think they're necessarily going to be sellers before the deadline because there's a lot of good players on this roster.
Yeah, this is a team that really in the draft, they went all out on defense the first couple of years, and they have some really good defensive cornerstones on that team. The other part that makes it a bit difficult is the GM there is Scott Fitterer, who was hired by Matt Rhule, but didn't have final say on the roster. And David Tepper, when speaking to reporters the other day, kind of didn't give an exact answer on what his future is. So it definitely makes this situation much more complicated on him as well to figure out what his future will be. It reminds me a little bit of what happened with Mike Mayock last year when John Gruden was fired. Eventually, they moved on from Mayock and started from scratch. That could be where David Tepper ends up leaning to at the end of the year, and he tries to reset, which is unfortunate for Fitterer, who really many people believe will be a great GM, but he never had the ability to be a GM with the power that he would want to have. Let me move over to a team that is doing, I guess, okay for what people thought, especially their quarterback, and that is the Seahawks and Geno Smith. He is currently PFF's highest graded quarterback at 90.2. I don't think anyone in the media saw this coming. One person did, and his name is Geno Smith. This is what he had to say last week, which is amazing. Let's play it over here.
We're only 4 weeks in and focused on the task at hand, but you're in the midst of doing something that we frankly haven't really seen before. The guy was a backup for 7 years, and now you're in the top of the league in passer rating. You just got off as player of the week.
You surprised by that?
Am I?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you told me before the season, I'd be a little surprised.
Yeah, it's because you never watched me throw. Yeah.
Drop the mic there. Okay, so he was expecting it, and he has been pretty good so far. Sam, let me ask you straight up. Are you expecting this version of Geno Smith, who just turned 32 years old, to be the Geno Smith we see moving forward?
I think we've reached the point now where I think this is the guy. Like Geno Smith right now looks for real. I don't think this is just a run of a few weird games where, you know, we see that all the time, right? Sam Darnold had an incredible 2 or 3 game stretch at the end of one of his seasons. And it gives you the hope. Maybe Darnold can be the guy going forward. Geno had it for a couple of games way back with the Jets. But I think we've reached the point now where the sample size is large enough and he's playing well enough that I really don't see this just evaporating and being a thing we look back on in a few years' time and saying, wow, remember that month where Geno Smith was the best quarterback in the NFL? I think he really is a different player than we saw from him previously. And as much as he might have the confidence to say, you know, I was just waiting for the chance. I always knew I was this guy. I mean, he isn't. He's a different guy than he was before. He's always been able to throw it, but he hasn't necessarily been able to make the right decisions and run the offense as effectively and as collectively as he is right now. This is a truly impressive performance from Geno Smith. And as much as Seattle, they don't have a great roster around him, in particular on defense, but he still does have DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett. The offensive line is moving in the right direction. Both those rookie tackles look like good players. The offense could actually be pretty good around Geno Smith. So I think this is one of the surprises of the season, but I do think it's for real.
You know, when the offseason was coming to an end, I had somebody tell me that the Seahawks moved on from Russell Wilson. It was time for everyone to move on. But Pete Carroll also wanted to prove that he could win with any quarterback in his system, and he really believed in Geno Smith, and he also really believed in Drew Lock, who's also still there. Geno won the job. Drew lost out, had COVID and everything, didn't have a good preseason game to end it. Geno wins, and he's proven so far that he could run this offense, and it's been pretty phenomenal. Now, on the flip side, we mentioned Russell Wilson just now. It has not really been working out so far in Denver. And they've been on primetime three times so far, one against the Seahawks, which they lost. The other two was a 11-10 win and a 12-9 loss. What's going on over there? What is the problem in Denver right now? Nathaniel Hackett, Russell Wilson, something clearly is a problem there.
I mean, I think the reason it's such an issue is that there are multiple problems there, you know, and any one of them on its own might be able to kind of brush that under the rug and get by. But when it's all happening at once, all of a sudden it's a much bigger deal. I think Hackett has obviously struggled with the breadth of responsibilities that an NFL head coach has, particularly on game day, you know, and he's already made moves in terms of bringing in somebody to help with that kind of stuff. I think the play calling in the red zone especially has been disastrous. Russell Wilson has been dealing with his shoulder injury as well now. It comes out that that's probably part of it. And then the other element is, one, Russell Wilson, I think, plays the game in a very different way than most quarterbacks, and maybe a unique way. And that might not be something that can just be neatly folded into a new offensive system or just any offensive system. And then the last element being that the one he's trying to squeeze it into, Nathaniel Hackett's offense, it's very different to anything else he's run before. And it's a very different thing than the style of play that Russell Wilson is most happy with. So whether it works or not, even if it does pan out down the line, I think it will take time for these two things to gel. It was kind of like when Tom Brady went from the New England offense to Bruce Arians' offense. And we were talking about, how is that going to work? You know, Brady's system is very different from the Bruce Arians system, and it was going to take an awful lot of kind of compromise and meeting in the middle for those things to function. Now, that ended up working quite well pretty quickly, but it still took a few weeks for that to kind of work all the kinks out and for them to stop making mistakes and kind of get with the program. I think we're just seeing a bigger problematic version of that, which is like those two are very far apart. In addition to Wilson dealing with an injury, in addition to Hackett struggling with play calling, and all of that is just combining for sort of one catastrophic offense.
You know, first of all, the Broncos are back on primetime again this week on Monday night against the Chargers.
Thanks, NFL.
That's going to be an interesting one. But it's a bit of an outside-the-box question. But the Packers lost two offensive-minded guys this offseason. Hackett went to Denver. Luke Getsy went to Chicago. Both those guys have struggled so far with their new teams. Do you feel like when hiring coaches or offensive coordinators, sometimes it might not all be about the play caller, and sometimes it might just be the quarterback they have, because Hackett has been not so great and neither has Getsy so far in Chicago?
Yeah, I think there's something to the idea of, you know, you can't just grab an offensive mind from a system that's doing well. You know, you need to be at least convinced that that guy brought part of that to the table. And you know, I would like, if I'm hiring an offensive mind because of the success of the offense he's been in, I would like to understand that he's a driving part of that equation. And I'd like to sort of hear that he's an ideologue and that he actually brings a system or a section of ideas to the table. So evidently the Vikings, you know, were confident enough that Kevin O'Connell brought a big part of that Rams offense with him. It's not just a case of hiring a guy that Sean McVay, you know, brought up in the system and was comfortable enough just steering the ship. They were confident that Kevin O'Connell brings part of that to the table. I don't know if that's the case with Nathaniel Hackett. Even when you hear stories about how important he was for Aaron Rodgers and that kind of bounce back. Remember, like before the back-to-back MVPs, people were kind of asking, what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers? Is he the same guy that he was back when he was an MVP? And then Hackett comes in, the LaFleur offense, all this stuff, and all of a sudden Rodgers is back to being Rodgers. But when you hear what Hackett was bringing to the table there, it's stories about how, you know, Rodgers liked being around him and he brought jokes and they bonded over, you know, trivia and Star Wars and all that kind of stuff, which is, it's great. Like it's a positive thing. It's important apparently for Aaron Rodgers, but I'm not sure it translates to the next guy. Like, you know, what if Russell Wilson doesn't like Star Wars or Jeopardy? Like, is that as useful if he's not bringing the kind of the X's and O's answers to the offense that, that are apparently necessary at this point? So I don't know. It feels like that's something you need to be convinced of if you're grabbing a guy, particularly from a successful quarterback, that, you know, what can you show us in the interview to demonstrate that, like, you are bringing this, you're the reason for the success, not just having a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I've been wondering about. But, you know, Rodgers was really like telling teams, get this guy, he's going to be great. Hackett actually interviewed with the Falcons the year before this one. They ended up hiring Arthur Smith. But Aaron Rodgers personally called Arthur Blank and told him, you guys should strongly consider him. They didn't in the end, but he went to bat for him again this offseason. I know people are talking about maybe Aaron going to Denver. I don't know if he actually talked to Denver in this scenario or not, but point is, he was somebody he was batting for, but so far it's been a struggle there in Denver. Another team that has a new quarterback is Washington with Carson Wentz. And Ron Rivera was asked a question this week, which we'll play right now, which made the rounds around social media. Let's play it over here.
Aaron, following up on John's question about the Giants, you know, they're up to a faster start. The Eagles, the Cowboys, you know, they've kind of all been rebuilding too the last couple of years, and it seems like they're farther ahead. Why do you think the teams in the division are farther ahead at this point?
Quarterback.
All right. One word answer, and he was straight up about it. He did talk to his team after. He did apologize for it, or made it clear that's not what he actually meant, whatever it is. But how short of a leash do you think Carson Wentz has right now? Because, first of all, I don't know how much of the blame should be solely on him, because that defense, which has a lot of young players, has also struggled mightily. But people do forget the Commanders gave up a 2023 third-round pick, which becomes a second-round pick if you play 70% of the snaps this year. So at what point do you feel like Washington has to let this go and maybe try out a Sam Howell?
I think he probably has a reasonable leash, because I think the alternatives are really unattractive to Washington. You know, we saw last season that Taylor Heinicke is just not going to be that guy, even if he threatened it right at the start of his career. Incredible playoff performance against Tom Brady. There was some optimism there, and then it just didn't happen last year. And Sam Howell, as much as there were some people that liked him a lot at draft time, he slipped as far as he did for a reason in the draft and in preseason. You know, had one nice game at the end, but he really didn't look ready in terms of being able to function within an NFL offense. Like, that's going to need to be a very different offense if he's the quarterback at any point. So I think Wentz probably has a pretty long rope to be able to play with before they make any kind of changes, because any changes almost certainly make them worse. It's going to be a case of, if Wentz plays his way to the bench or not, where they simply don't have another choice. That the Ron Rivera thing was very strange, though, because I kind of buy the idea that he didn't mean it that way, you know, and that, but it wasn't taken out of context. Like, it's not, they had to kind of prompt him to come back with a further explanation. Like, it's not like he said that and then went on to explain, you know, I mean, in continuity terms and all this kind of stuff. Like, he was done. He just said quarterback, stop talking. And then somebody had to be like, wait, Dallas, like, they had to get the extra bit of information out of him. So, and Rivera is like, this is not an inexperienced guy. He's been around a long time. It makes very little sense that he didn't understand that, like, that would be taken the wrong way. I'm very confused as to that answer, because I also don't really think it makes sense as like a shot across Carson Wentz's bow. A, I don't think Wentz is the kind of quarterback that reacts well to that. And B, you probably undo that if you then have to go the next day and kind of apologize to him for it.
If the reporter asked him, do you regret your current quarterback decision? And he basically said no. And he said Carson's had some struggling games and had some good games, but he didn't really, I guess, answer the question from there. And the next day he came out and said, I spoke to the team and we've cleared everything up. The Commanders do play on Thursday night against the Chicago Bears. So another amazing Thursday night game here coming up for everybody. Anyways, let's move on here to a player who's not on the team right now, and that is Odell Beckham Jr., who is expected to be fully cleared next month from his ACL surgery. I don't know if you saw this, but today he put out a tweet where he mentioned that LA knows where I want to be, but they didn't offer me anything. So I don't know what people want me to do. I definitely know my worth, and what the offer was isn't reflective of that. So it's tough to say that I can come on back, even though I thought I finally found that home. All right, he'll be back on the field coming up next month. And the Rams have obviously been struggling so far this year. He said they don't have a good offer out. He did make a, I don't know if it's an official visit to the Giants, but visited with his buddy Sterling Shepard. He was on the sidelines for a Tampa Bay game. I guess the question is, where do you see Odell Beckham Jr. fitting? Because it feels like he'll have some options out there.
Yeah, I think he will. I think the Rams probably expected Allen Robinson to be a big upgrade over Odell Beckham, and that's kind of where that money would have gone. You know, maybe they would have been interested in OBJ, but they thought Robinson would be that guy, and that just hasn't worked out at all so far. To me, the most obvious landing spot is still Green Bay. I mean, they have maybe the worst wide receiver group in the NFL. They still expect to be a playoff team. They still want to be contending for a Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers there. And I honestly don't think they can with the current wide receiver group. So, you know, if they can bring in a guy like OBJ later into the season, even if he doesn't, you know, spend essentially a couple of months just getting back, just getting up to speed, and then, okay, it's week 18, it's the playoffs, now we need you, that makes more sense than I think any other destination.
Yeah, I believe it was when you were here the first time on the show, we were doing a storylines episode in the heading into the preseason. One of my things that I mentioned was, will Odell sign before the season starts or let the options come to him? So he didn't sign back with the Rams. He mentioned he doesn't have a good offer from them, and he let the season start, and it sounds like he'll have options coming to him. And the Packers were the other team that he was interested in last year before he ultimately chose the Rams. Aaron Rodgers has floated his name around in some interviews he's done as of late, including on Pat McAfee's show. So it could be a match maybe this year. As you mentioned, the Packers definitely need some receiver help. But going back to the Rams for a second, coming off now back-to-back losses, they've been the second worst pass blocking team in the league so far with a 47 grade, I believe. They do have a bye after this week's game against the Panthers, but are you concerned with where this team is right now?
Yeah, I think their offensive line is a major problem. And the Sean McVay offense, since he got to Los Angeles, has been extremely closely linked to how good the offensive line is. And the last time their offensive line was this bad was 2019, where the Rams were, what, a 9-7 team and really weren't in contention all season long. They just weren't good enough on the offensive line. So that's how bad the offensive line is this season. And if they don't figure out a way of improving that, I don't see how they can be a true contender. I don't think they have the capacity to overcome the kind of problems that they have up front. Obviously, it's going to be kind of magnified and exposed to the fullest when you're playing teams like Dallas, who have one of the best pass rushes in the league, but it's a problem against everybody.
Yeah, as I mentioned, they have the Panthers coming up this week. They've been trying to sign a bunch of these journeyman veterans and putting them on the practice squad, see what they have. Matt Skura, Ode Abushi. I mean, it hasn't really worked out so far. Brian Allen could be back this week at center. They've used four different centers so far this year. If he's back, possibly. If not, they might just wait until after the bye for him to be fully healthy. The last thing I want to ask you is, the roughing the passers became a pretty big deal once again this week. We had it in the Atlanta-Tampa Bay game. We had it on Monday night with the Chiefs and the Raiders. The question I have for you is, should the NFL consider making roughing the passer a reviewable penalty?
No, I think that's the worst thing that they could do. Like, roughing the passer is a reviewable penalty to me is the same as when pass interference was a reviewable call, you know, and the mess that that was. It's just all you're going to do is spend 5 minutes with waiting for replay to essentially uphold or overturn, you know, a terrible call at random. There's going to be no logic to it because it's hyper subjective. It's slow motion replays to make everything worse. To me, the problem is not being able to review the bad calls. It's the rules, I think, are forcing some of these bad calls. It's a lot like when the catch rule was written in such a way that it became absurd. Like you were almost compelled to make a decision that just didn't bear any relation to reality. You know, like the Calvin Johnson thing, the Dez Bryant catch, did he, you know, Dez caught it. Like these are things that were essentially forced by a bad rule. That I think is what you're seeing with pass interference, with this, you can't land on the quarterback because the last time it happened, Aaron Rodgers, he broke his collarbone, you know? So we have to knee jerk and write a rule that now restricts people from doing very natural things in the course of a sack. So I don't think the answer to this is make a reviewable call. I think it's, you know, let's have some common sense here and say that if you're going to sack a quarterback, you're kind of entitled to a degree of physicality. Like this is still football. The quarterback is going to get hit.
What the NFL is concerned about, and the Grady Jarrett one was just inexcusable. The Chris Jones one, even though he had the ball in his hand, which is a different story, but if he didn't have the ball in his hand, they believe that type of a hit where he's landing on him is how a quarterback breaks his collarbone, sure. Which is the problem, which is what they don't want because they don't want backup quarterbacks playing. But is there any other solution for you where they don't want physicality? They don't want the defensive lineman landing on him hard. Is there any sort of solution for you where you could work around that?
I mean, if that's the goal, you know, that quarterbacks never get hurt. Like let's make it so that the starting quarterback never goes down due to an injury. Then you're inevitably heading to a point of you just make thud contact on a quarterback, we stop the play. Like that's what you're talking about here. And the problem is that as long as you have quarterbacks like say Josh Allen or, you know, any quarterback that's big, physical, and can fight out of contact, it's you can't stop the play because then the helmet catch never happens. You know, plays like that where a quarterback fights out of physical contact and ends up still making a play anyway, those are off the table because as soon as a defender makes solid contact on the quarterback, we're blowing the whistle and the play's dead. Now, if that's the way you want to go, fine, but you have to understand, like, this is the law of unintended consequences. You're taking away those plays as well. Like those don't happen. And maybe that is the direction they want to go, but that's the only thing you can do if you want to say quarterbacks, we need to protect the quarterbacks at all costs. Then fine, you just simply need to stop them getting hit on sacks. But that's a fairly fundamental change to the game as we know it right now.
The NFL has no plans to change anything as of right now, but I heard if it happens again this week in a critical moment, it's going to be interesting to see what happens because the reaction will only get louder. I hope it doesn't happen, but if it does, I think it will be a fascinating situation to follow moving forward here with the season. All right, Sam, I want to thank you for coming on again. Everyone can follow you on Twitter. It is at @PFF_Sam. And check out the PFF NFL podcast with you and Steve Palazzolo. You guys go on 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And also check out all your amazing content at PFF.com. And let's do this again sometime soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.